This program is brought to you by PrideNZ.com.
So I'm here with Prue Hyman, who has stuff to do with lesbian radio. Did you help start it, or how did you get involved in it?
I didn't really help start it, although I did the occasional program from pretty early on. It's been going a really long time, and Alison, Laurie and Linda Evans were two of the founding group, and for a while they did the whole thing themselves for quite a number of years, which was a major commitment. And then if they went off overseas or anything, I used to do the odd program to fill in for them, and occasionally I was interviewed on it as well myself. And then it got to the point quite very sensibly when it was too much for them to do it on their own anymore, and they'd had done their time. And then there've been a lot of different collectives since then, and larger numbers have always been involved after that, but there's always been one major coordinator person, and there've been several of those since Alison and Linda, but I'm the last, and I've been going as coordinator. I was trying to work out, I can't remember exactly when I started, but nearly 10 years anyway I've been coordinating it. That's probably an exaggeration, maybe it's 7, but anyway, it's quite a long time. The person before me was Bronwyn Dean, who sadly died about 3 years ago. She still was an occasional broadcaster right up till her death, but she was the one that persuaded me to take over from her. I think we were partners at the time, or we just stopped being partners, but she just had enough of being the main coordinator. And so I took over, and I seem to be landed ever since. I've been making noises in the last year or two that, you know, I'm 67 now, and I mean, I'm still very energetic and quite happy doing it, but one's aware that you're hoping to broadcast to a huge range of lesbians and a lot younger than me, and that maybe it was time for one of the younger ones to take over. But nobody seems keen at the moment. I've got some people who do some of the tasks, though, which helps a lot.
When did Alison, Laurie and Linda even start Lesbian Radio?
I knew you'd ask me that. I never got around to quite looking it up. We were Lesbian Radio started, and it wasn't just them, actually, at the very start. There was a group of several, and I think people like Robin Shave, Maxine Gunderson and Tiggy and Stone were all involved too, but they weren't involved for as long, and it was Linda and Alison that did the long stint. They were involved almost from the start of Access Radio in Wellington, which is coming up for about 30 years. So it's something like that. It was very early on, in late 70s, early 80s. And when Access Radio started, it was actually, and when Lesbian Radio started, it was actually an offshoot of the Women's Zone programme. There was a Women's Zone programme which ran weekly, and it was given over to lesbians for 1 out of 4 weeks or something like that, with quite a struggle to get that in the usual sort of a way that happens with lesbian organisations. And that was okay for a while, and then this group of people thought, heck, we can manage our own program and go every week, not once every 4 weeks. So that was after about probably a year or so of being part of the Women's Zone program, we started on our own. And of course, Women's Zone is long gone, and Lesbian Radio has broadcast week in, week out, without fail, usually going live, which is quite unusual on Access Radio. Only a small proportion of the programs go live rather than pre-recording, particularly weekend ones. We've gone every week ever since, and I think we've only gone dark, I think maybe once somebody didn't turn up, and a few times their transmitter's been down, but basically we've gone every week since then, which is a pretty big achievement, it seems to me. And it's an hour, of course, and it's on Sundays from 10 till 11, and we go live, and you have to remember all sorts of things. Like this week, I've reminded the people that are on that the clocks go forward an hour, so they've got to get there an hour earlier. It's all sorts of things you have to remember with radio. Oh, there we go.
It was kind of late 70s, early 80s, around that time. What was the climate like then? And was the climate then, was that the need, or was that the drive to set up Lesbian Radio? Or was it just a group of lesbians who were like, oh, how do we really call it?
I think the drive was very much political and awareness and activism. I think, you know, the whole climate around that time with homosexual law reform and human rights and, you know, and lesbian political action had been going for a while with things like the magazine Circle, which had been going since the earlier 70s, but 73, I think, that started. But, of course, there wasn't Access Radio, community radio then. But, so it was heavily an activism thing, but also an outreach thing. people who were questioning their coming out. It was another source apart from coming out groups, where before you declare yourself, you can listen and see what lesbians are doing and what they're saying. And they're not particularly scary, but they are activists. And a lot of lesbians then were feminists as well, which some still are, not all. And so there was all that going on. And I think from the beginning, that was a main motivation. But plus, of course, just publicising all the events that were on in Wellington. We still do that. There's probably less need for us to do that anymore, in the sense that, of course, there's the websites. Ellen runs the website. She's also a member of our collective. And there's lots and lots of email groups and so on and so forth. So there's lots of ways, and social networking and Twitter and Facebook and everything. So lots of ways you can find out what's going on. And I tend to like to do a programme when I'm on that's very full of real action, i.e. of interviews and politics and some music. I haven't mentioned music yet, I'll come back to that. So I don't spend very long on the notices. I tend to do the things that are very urgent that are coming up the next week or two, and the things that go on every week. I say go to wellington.lesbian.nz, you can find all those there, you know, because it's a waste of time duplicating that. So, but we have a very varied sort of content. Everybody does the notices, either to greater or lesser extents. Everybody plays some music. And apart from that, it's entirely up to the individual presenters as to what sort of range of things they cover amongst lesbian stuff. And, yeah, so... And I think that's very healthy. You know, we try and have a big range of presenters who will appeal to different bits of the community. We don't do terribly well about the range of ethnicity. We're mostly Pākehā. We've had some Asian presenters and Māori presenters and Pacific, but not very many. And we're busy with other things as well. It's very reasonable. And we try and get a range of ages, and we try and get a range of interests in different lesbian activities. So, and we're always open to new presenters. I'm always keen to get them. They can always contact me, and there's stuff about that on the website. So anyone listening to this who's keen, get in touch. We've had some quite new presenters lately. There's a lesbian feminist queer book group, and two of their people are now on board as techies, because that's the other big thing. We also have to run the technical side ourselves. Now, we didn't used to do that. Access used to provide a technician. And then you could choose whether you did or didn't provide a technician yourself. And we went on having it provided, because with such a range of presenters, and you only get a turn every 8 weeks or something, it's quite hard to remember exactly everything on the technical side.
So many knobs.
Exactly. And it's quite hard to do both, particularly the people that go on their own. If there's two of you, it's not quite so difficult. So we preferred to have a techie provided, and we paid a little bit extra in order to do that, not much, because you have to pay a fee to be on air. And suddenly we discovered we were the only program left with a techie provided. I didn't realise, and they said, your time is numbered. We were very lucky for a while. A woman called Yanyo, who was part of the volunteer techie things for Access generally, was also sort of very lesbian friendly. I'm not sure whether she identified, but very lesbian. And she was happy to become our techie, and used to come in every week, which was a heck of a commitment. And then she was going away, and another lesbian called Marilyn, who was also a volunteer for Access, was prepared to do most weeks, and she did it for a while and also trained up some others. Some of our own presenters trained a little bit to do it, and we started appealing for techies as well. And now I've got a roster which has something like 11 or 12 lots of presenters, either in individuals or pairs, fewer in taking time out and may come back and so on and so forth, but it's about that many. And we've got six techies now on our roster who take turns, so we're not too badly off, but we're always willing to have more, and people come and go for good reasons. We've had a lot of babies recently. That used not to be the beginnings of lesbian radio. That wasn't a common reason to be going disappearing, but it is now. And one or two have died, sadly, so people come and go, and others have things happen in their lives that they don't want to do it anymore or get fed up with it, and that's fair enough. but we're very vibrant. We go every week, as I say, and we go live 10 to 11 on Sundays, even on over the Christmas period when Access is shut, because we've got our gadgets to get in, and there we go. And that's basically the way it works.
You said that when lesbian radio got a week out of four, was that right, from Woman's Zone, that was kind of difficult. Was there controversy around there being lesbian radio, or was it...
I don't think
that they didn't want to give up one of their weeks or
something
like that.
I don't think it's been that much of a problem. Alison, who was around, you know, involved in that at the time, and Linda would know more about it. I wasn't involved in the politics around that. I think it took a bit of getting it, as always, you know, from the Lavender Menace. They used to, more of an American expression, but, you know, fighting for your space within feminist stuff. But... I know, I think it was okay, but then, you know, when we got a confidence that we could do it every week, that was even better. And there we go. And I think lesbian politics, you know, so, I mean, feminist politics is still alive, but an awful lot of organisations have gone. I mean, a lot of lesbian organisations have gone too. I think the big thing about lesbian radio is that you get the discussion and the interviews, and that you can't get in any of the other media. Well, you can get a bit of discussion on Facebook or whatever, but you get that live, whereas we haven't got, for example, a Wellington lesbian newsletter anymore. We've had lots of them over the years. There's one in Auckland. There aren't many around where you can get those sorts of things. So that's its main function, as far as I'm concerned, is for the politics and for outreach to new lesbians and lesbians coming to Wellington for the first time, all that sort of thing. And of course now it's beyond, because you can now listen to it on the web anytime. That's only developed the last two or three years, where Access have put the podcast up on the web, and it stays up for, it goes up a few days after, and it stays up for about 5 or 6 weeks. They have 5 or 6 up at a time, so you can listen to those. And beyond that, those podcasts, and in the old days we used to tape the program, are all available, practically the whole lot. I think there are a few missing, but most of them have gone to LAGANS, the Lesbian and Gay Archives New Zealand. So, and there's a project on at the moment that I think has just got funding from the Armstrong Arthur Trust, and I should say a bit more about them in a moment, where some of them are going to be put into better form. The old tapes are going, which don't last forever, are going to be put onto a better electronic form. So there'll be a lot of the programs will be there for posterity and future researchers, future lesbians to listen to, which will reflect the changing mores of lesbian society, which in community culture, which is great. I should pay a tribute at this point to the Armstrong and Arthur Charitable Trust for Lesbians, who fund us. They've also funded this research project, this project, as I say, to put more programs on in a better electronic form, but they fund us every week. We pay something like just under $50 a week as our access fee, and they fund that basic fee and our small annual fee. In the old days, it was the Dudes Dances. I think when it first began, there wasn't a fee, but once the fee came in, it takes enough energy to do the program and the preparation for it without having to do all the fundraising. So our group's very grateful that we don't have to fundraise the whole of that ourselves. We usually have one fundraising thing at least a year. I think we're doing a raffle at the next Pines Dance, and sometimes we raise a little bit at the Atmosphere thing or something like that. But we don't have to do most of the fundraising ourselves, which is terrific.
What have been some of your, I guess, favourite discussions or interviews?
Oh gosh, it's really difficult. I love, you know, publicising what's about to happen. So things like, the film festivals each year, we always give that a big plug, Lesbian Gay Film Festival, with and talk to the people who've been choosing the lesbian films for that. I like it when we're in the middle of publicising the Asia Pacific Out Games for next March, the games, the conference, the culture, all that sort of thing. I think it's really good when you can give that a lot of air plug. But also some of the more political stuff. We've done interviews with people overseas sometimes. We don't do an awful lot live, but we've got a new, very dynamic presenter of US origins, who's a singer-songwriter called Paula, and she's been in festivals and things in the States before she immigrated here, and she's got Nicaraguan background as well, and she's done one or two things with America live, and you can do it, but it's a little expensive. But if people were travelled overseas, they'd often do interviews and bring them back with all sorts of people, lesbian political figures overseas. Those are always good, and all the just simply the discussions in New Zealand when we've got stuff around civil union bill, and you know, and we tend to do the more vibrant arguments around that. I mean, everybody sort of assumes that we have lesbian equal rights means you want marriage first, civil union second. But there's quite a lot of lesbian feminists who think, why do we want to join an institution with, you know, which feminists have critiqued for years? So reflecting all those bits of politics, not selling a line, but every presenter is allowed to give their own views, but also try and I like to interview people who have different views. We have to be careful with national politics immediately before elections and things like that. You're not allowed, you know, there are access rules, and there are also rules about, you know, defamation and things, so you've got to take care like any other broadcaster, even though you're not a professional. But certainly I think the more controversy and you know, real discussion you get going, the better. But other people will just do, you know, more social things, and that's fine too. As Esme is one of our long-standing presenters, and she often does interviews like at Out in the Square with all sorts of people that are doing their own stalls there, and that's always nice. So everybody differs a bit about what they want to do, but they're all. I think people, if they listen to long ranges of programs, they'd find some really interesting things. I think my favourite ever program was for me, that I did myself, was before I was ever even a coordinator. I'm Jewish by origin. I don't regard myself as religiously Jewish, but I'm Jewish culture and history and so on. And Tilly Lloyd, who runs Unity Shop, she had a bit of involvement with the programme, not a great deal, but she persuaded me that I to do a programme about being Jewish in the lesbian and feminist communities and lesbian and feminist in the Jewish communities and what that was like. And I had great fun doing that program. And I also did an interview with a group in Auckland who were Jewish feminists, and a large number of them were lesbians, who were involved with fighting for Māori sovereignty and talking about links between being outsider groups, you know, if you like. And they had a big push. That was very interesting stuff. So there's been a lot of good memories from doing the lesbian program.
Has the I'd say readership, but I guess you don't really read the radio, a listenership, has that changed much over the years, or is it hard to say?
Well, one of the sad things is that it's very hard to know who's listening, and you know, sometimes you're scared that you're only talking to yourself and the other presenters, most of whom, you know, are interested and listen. Chris Walsh is another terrific stalwart of the program. She's not on at the moment. She's well known for her activism over breast cancer. She and her partner both have had breast cancer, and she got too busy with all that to stay on the program. But she's been on for many years. And when she did, I'm not sure whether it was part of a degree, but she certainly did do a degree, and she also did this research project. She did a research project on our listenership at one stage, and you know, that was interesting and helpful for knowing what people wanted, but that's quite a long way back now. These days it's very hard to know. One thing you can look at is the number of hits on the website, and it's much easier now that you can do it other day. I'm sure we've lost some listeners who do it on the web instead, which is absolutely fine, but we've gained. And at one point last year, we were the second highest access radio programme for number of hits to Wellington Community, which was the broadest, and I thought that was absolutely terrific. And there were hits from all over the world, from Canada, Japan, Britain, States, all over, as well as a lot of New Zealand ones. We hope that they're all genuine hits and not pervs. Certainly, I think most of them probably are genuine. And that was exciting. And you get informal feedback, you know, when you've been on yourself, somebody will say, oh, I heard that, this particular bit was good. But unless we do another solid piece of research, it's very hard to know. But I think there is a real need for it, particularly given, as I say, that we don't have much else for discussing things. We have the other ways of finding out what's going on. But I think I hope there's still a need for it. And I hope that we'll go on finding people that want to do it, and that the trust will go on funding it. Bronwyn, who I mentioned before, who was a previous coordinator, left quite a lot of money to the Armstrong and Arthur Trust not conditional on the radio, but certainly made clear that the radio was one of the big her big things that was in her heart, and she, and it was that they've earmarked that interest from that bit to do this project of putting more programs electronically. And so hopefully, as long as we're going, and as long as the community feel a need for it, we'll keep going. Of course, media changes. Maybe it'll get to the point where radio, you know, the electronic stuff completely beats radio, but I don't think that's in my lifetime anyway, so I hope we'll be able to keep going for a long time yet.
It's quite different, eh, when you can kind of hear something. I think it's a really different medium, being able to hear stuff, not just see moving pictures and that kind of thing.
Yeah, and that's why these interviews are also useful. I mean, we do more hearing on the computer than we used to.
Yeah, I think that's really interesting, because someone was telling me about when, I guess, radio shows or whatever can go on the internet, they have a longer tail. I don't know what a tail is. But, yeah, that because they stay online, you don't have to listen live and you can catch up on it later. And so there's listeners from all over the world, you've said.
Yeah, well, certainly. The website, I don't know whether they're regulars, but they, they hit it now and then, at least, yeah, which is quite exciting. And, for example, in TMLN, the Auckland newsletter carries an ad for it with the website, so as to remind people up there. And I'm always telling people, you know, that to remember that they can get it on the web and try and get publicity for it that way. Leaflets at the out in the square to do that. When we do the raffle at the next Pines Dance, we'll have a leaflet advertising it and giving the website as well, and, you know, just trying to get the word out amongst new and younger lesbians who may not have heard of it, you know.
Are you aware of other lesbian radio shows around the world?
There certainly used to be lots, but I don't think there are that many. Christchurch used to have one. I think that one's gone. I'm not sure. Funnily enough, we had a request from the Southland Access Radio just this last week. Could they replay our one? Because the manager there, who I don't know even whether she's lesbian, but she hasn't managed. She tried to get a lesbian radio show going in Southland and didn't manage it. Could she use ours? And I've just emailed round our collective to say, I can't see any reason why not. Anybody bothered? And I'm sure we'll say yes. And I think, you know, I thought to myself, why is she bothering? Because it's on the web, they can get it. But on the other hand, if somebody is used to listening to Southland Access, they may hit it in a way they wouldn't hit it, you know, on the web.
So not everybody has internet access. Sometimes we can forget that we think that everyone's got internet
access. That's true too. But also people use different sources for finding things, and they might find it that way when they wouldn't find it, you know, the other way, and that sort of thing. So I think, I'm sure there are still other programs around the world, but I think it's interesting the way, from my experience, New Zealand sort of keeps the L word very prominent, whereas an awful lot of things get subsumed into queer soup or into feminist in a lot of places. I mean, even you think in America, the Michigan Women's Music Festival, it's a women's music festival, it's mainly lesbian. But, you know.
Why do you think that is? Why do you think?
Oh, God, I'm not.
No idea.
I'm not a theoretician enough to know, but I think out here we've been very staunch about lesbian politics. I mean, there are others. Of course, there are a lot of younger women who don't want to use the lesbian word, who would rather regard them as use the queer word, just as they don't want to use the feminist word, but want equality. You know, so I think things change, but I think there are at least a lot of lesbians in New Zealand who want to keep lesbian politics alive, whether the younger generation will want to as well, but we've got quite a few younger women on our collective, and I think on the library collective and so on, so there are quite still some younger women who want to use the word lesbian and who do identify that way politically. And okay, we all have fluid changing identities and all that stuff, but nevertheless there are some for whom that identity is an important one, and not only 67-year-olds like me, some younger women.
Have you always been really vocal? Have you always done kind of public speaking, and is that why lesbian radio interests you? Or?
Well, I am professionally an academic, and, you know, you're used to talking in 50-minute bites anyway, like the sound of your own voice.
So good training.
And right back in my university days in England, because I spent my first 25 years in England, I was involved when I was at university in Oxford, and it was while I was there that We fought, I was a feminist back then, I was only 18, 19, but I don't know what I'd called myself one there, because in the early 60s, you know, second wave wasn't that much going, but I certainly believed in equality, and women couldn't get into the Oxford Union. Remember the Oxford Union? That's the thing where David Longy's famous debate about uranium, you know, nuclear thing.
They couldn't
thing.
Get in then.
They were not admitted. Women were not admitted to the Oxford Union. It was a male-only club. It wasn't like a student union, that you had your sort of student unions within your college, but this was the Oxford Union, which was a debating club and a, you know, a nice gentleman's club.
But within the university?
But it was within the university.
Within a co-ed university?
Within a co-ed university. Wow. And women were not admitted. And so we fought for it. And we got in while I was there. And so people said, you have to put your money where your mouth is and join. And you better start speaking.
So they make a fuss about it when you try to join? Or were they kind of like, oh, yeah, it is a bit old school that we don't admit
women?
Well,
we had to fight for it. But we won. And so that was about 1963 or something. And I was about 20 and a young undergraduate. And I started making speeches at the Oxford Union, which is one of the most frightening places you could ever do. If you can speak at the Oxford Union when to that whole big crowd, when you get one of the big paper speeches, then you can speak anywhere. And
were there hecklers? Why was it scary?
No.
Because it's such a big kind of prestigious thing.
Yes, just a very big audience.
Not people
very
throwing
critical.
Apple cores.
No, nothing, nothing. Nobody would be ungentlemanly or unladylike like that. But no, but it was just a pretty
daunting
audience. And I think after that I could speak anywhere. So I don't find talking on the radio too difficult. I sometimes talk a bit too fast because I've always got too much to say. I've been criticised for that in lectures as well, and I'm aware of it. I always want to put more into the 50 minutes or the radio programme than there's time for, but I've never had any trouble with it. It's sort of interesting with, you know, we take all comers who have got the confidence to be on air here. We're happy to have them. But you do have some worries with some people's voices being better than others for radio. And some people I find, and I'm certainly not mentioning names, and some people are absolutely terrific. And some people have wonderful content, but not that terrific voices. And some people have terrific voices, but I wish they'd have a little bit more content. And many of our broadcasters are terrific at both. But that's, you know, but one doesn't want to discourage people being on air. And so we tend to take it. We've had controversies over the years. That's probably an interesting thing for this, about because of lesbian culture and what is lesbian changing. There have been hardliners who say, for example, that we should absolutely only have lesbian voices and lesbian music. What is lesbian music? You know, by, for, about. We always have those problems with lesbian, how we define things. But often with women musicians, you're not 100% certain whether they're lesbian or not, and then some come out as lesbian and so on. So we've tended to get as, you know, culture has changed, and as I say, fluid identities and so on, what is lesbian? Not everybody, even on the collective, necessarily uses the lesbian word. I think we've got people who would identify as bisexual probably on the collective, and I just don't want to push these things. If they're happy being on lesbian community radio and that's what it is, that tends to be fine. But controversy about whether we've interviewed, we do publicity about all sorts of queer events. So, I mean, you know, the fact that it's a lesbian and gay film festival or Pacific Games, we concentrate more on the lesbian aspects. But we've had gay men's voices where they're covering gay and lesbian issues on the programme being interviewed. We've had some transgender. There's always been issues in lesbian politics about male to female transgender people and whether they can be lesbians. So I try and avoid that controversy if I can, but I don't think we've had a transgender member of the collective. We certainly had transgender people interviewed, but you know, these things, we're not a very formal organisation either, I should say. We run a bank account, and I'm very careful with the money, and we have a collective meeting usually about three or four times a year after a programme. Anybody who feels like coming, you know, we give it publicity and we say we'll talk about the programme, meet each other, because people go in 1 week, they don't necessarily see the new members of the collective. So we try and get together three or four times a year, but we're not a very formal organisation. We don't have formal policies. We evolve, and it's worked. Sometimes I think, maybe we ought to be more formal, and then who wants to? You know, people want to go and make their programmes. That's the main thing.
Has it always been this kind of, I guess, controversy around identity and labels and cis woman and trans woman, that kind of stuff? Or has it only been the last few years? Or,
well, I think it was probably worse earlier on, in the sense that, you know, there was, I remember, I mean, people talk about the lesbian feminist late 70s, 80s as being, as lesbian feminists being rigid and, you know, wearing overalls, O'Neill dungarees or whatever, and being really anti-boy children and so on and so forth. And I think some people really did have that experience. I think some lesbians who had boy children really did have problems. I won't run down that experience at all, but I sometimes get a bit upset about it, that it gets exaggerated, and that people who weren't around at the time, you know, criticise the lesbian feminists of the 70s and 80s when they were doing a really big job, when it was really hard to come out, and they were, had to be much braver to be out as a lesbian in those days than you do now. So I think, but I think in some ways the controversies were more then, when, you know, people would come, I don't know how much it emerged on the radio, but people would come to lesbian dances and somebody would say, oh, she's not really a lesbian, she's still living at home with her husband, and things like that. You know, I think that was worse then probably than it is now. I think we're probably a bit more tolerant and easygoing. And some people think there's losses in that, in that we aren't fighting enough the political battles. Now, we may not have quite as bad political battles as we did as lesbians, but most lesbian feminists also had an awareness on race and class issues, and a lot of, you know, those are still as active and important, and poverty and treatment of soul mothers and Maori Pacific issues are as important as ever. And I think lesbian feminists should be on the barricades to dealing with them all as much as ever. So I don't think we want to lose the politics.
Fantastic. And how would we listen to you? Where, oh, what right. days and et cetera, et cetera?
Sunday mornings, 10 to 11 on, it's only on AM, 783 AM Radio Access. And that's the live one. And then if you want to listen on the web, you can either go to the Wellington Lesbian website, wellington.lesbian.net.nz, and there's a connection there to Access Radio and direct to the Lesbian Community Programme, or you can go to the Access Radio site, which is dead easy to find, and they have a list of all their programmes, and you just look for Lesbian Community and you find them there.
Brilliant. Thank you very much, Prue, for taking the time and talking with us.
Pleasure. Enjoyed it.